Hello and welcome to the Man Panel. I'm your host, Michelle Marchant-Johnson, and I'm so thrilled that you're here because we have wonderful things in store for you. And today I'm joined by a returning guest. He's a listener favorite, and that is my good friend and colleague, Roy Biancalana. Welcome, Roy.
No, it's so good to be here and be on the panel.
Woo-hoo!
A bunch of men talking about love. What a world we're living in.
I know, what a world we're living in. It's raining men. Hallelujah.
It is.
So, Roy, I know a lot of the women here will be familiar with you and your work, but I do want to give just a little brief intro.
Yeah,
Roy
yeah.
Biancalana is a certified relationship coach and a nationally recognized expert in the field of attraction and conscious relationships, and is also the host of the Attracting Lasting Love podcast. Along with being a frequent TV analyst, Roy is the author of 3 number one best-selling books, the latest of which is Relationship Bootcamp, Hardcore Training for Life, Love, and the Pursuit of Intimacy. I like that. Hardcore Training for Life, Love, and the Pursuit of Intimacy. Had a hard time getting it out, but we got the idea. For the past 15 years, Roy has been supporting single people in the art of attracting healthy, sustainable, intimate relationships. His experience has taught him that getting in relationship shape is the key to attracting lasting love. And I was just telling Roy that after COVID and sitting around on my butt a little too much for the last while, I'm trying to get back into the shape I've never been in. But we're going to be talking about the importance of being in shape for love. And Roy's going to be sharing some keys to attracting a healthy, conscious, available man. So welcome once again, Roy.
Yeah, it's good to be here. And I like the theme of, all right, the economy's opening up. I think I'm in Chicago and very soon, no masks, everything's open. And I like the idea of everybody's just kind of getting in shape physically, emotionally, relationally, because like it's like, Life is back on again. You know, you want to be ready for it. And that certainly applies to our love lives.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's so important that we talk about this, Roy, and I'm so glad you're bringing this to the forefront with your work, because, you know, so much emphasis is put on this idea of meeting the right person, attracting the right person. And certainly that's a worthy desire and a worthy goal. And certainly it's important. But what we don't always think about is the prerequisites and kind of like reverse engineering what has to happen to really make that possible, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. There's a principle here that is so obvious and so true, but it really is a challenge to kind of get your mind around and really incorporate into your life. And the principle is that birds of a feather flock together, okay? You attract after your own kind, right? So most of us, when we think about, hey, I want to find a healthy, available, conscious man, the question is, where do I find him? And where is he? And it's focused on him, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you, if you can get your head around and really own that the attraction happens based upon your own level of consciousness, health, availability, right? So you always attract a man who is as healthy and conscious and available as you are. And you only attract at that same level. You follow me? So mm-hmm. I always use an example, even though I don't, the age is really different, but I don't foresee someone like Eckhart Tolle being attracted to Kim Kardashian. Okay? Now there are different ages. I'm sure Eckhart, like I would say, she's hot, okay? But they're not on the same level. They, not that one is good or bad, but they operate from a different mindset. They're different perspectives. There's a different state of consciousness. So
I don't think Eckhart is keeping up with the Kardashians.
Right. So Eckhart is with Kim Ng, who is a deeply conscious, you know, woman, right? So the shift is not how do I find him? It's recognizing that I am going to attract a man who is in the same relationship shape that I am. Like you can't, you cannot be in a relationship that's healthier than you are.
Mm-hmm.
You won't attract a person who is more evolved or more committed to mindfulness, who is more available than you. You'll always attract someone who's on your level. So if you want the best version of what a man can be, the way you get him is work on being the best version that you can be. And then you're both going to be attracted to one another. So mm-hmm. It shifts everything from where do I find him? The question changes. It's like, what do I need to work on? What relationship muscles do I need to get to strengthen so that I can be the healthiest, most evolved, most available feminine creature I can possibly be? And when you put your emphasis on yourself and you're looking in the mirror, where do I need to grow? What are my blind spots? What can I learn from my past relationships that maybe how I participated in them to make them not maybe work out, right? So how can I evolve? Because the more I evolve, the higher quality man that vibrates with me. Mm-hmm. And then you end up getting what you want, but you're not having to try to find it. It there's kind of a magnetic thing. There's kind of a mystical thing. There's an energetic thing. So all you have to do is raise your own energy, your own consciousness, and you start to pick men out of they're like a higher realm. I don't know how to say it, right?
Yeah, so no, it's that's true.
A big shift in perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely true. And even though maybe we can't fully explain, or maybe we don't fully understand this whole energetic thing, it does not change the fact that it's real. It's just real.
Well, you can really see that like attracts like in the world around you. That's why there's a phrase, birds of a feather flock together, right? So it's that obvious. Everybody sees that you attract after your own kind, but most of us don't apply it to our love lives. We don't see it there because the ego doesn't like to feel like maybe it's the problem or that you have to work on you. It's so easy to say, I'm single because all the good ones are taken or gay, or I just haven't met the right person yet, as if the gods and fate are just not allowing it. It's easy to kind of put it on someone or something else. But when you kind of get what I'm talking about, you kind of got to look in the mirror and say, perhaps I'm responsible for the way my relationships have gone. And therefore, maybe I need to work on me. And I don't know about your ego, but my ego hates to take responsibility. To look in the mirror. I love pointing the finger, man. You. And I, you know, if people, if they're familiar with me, know I did that for years in my love life. It was my ex-wife. It was my ex-fiance. It's all you crazy women online. you know, always pointing, but not seeing the other three fingers are going right back here.
Right. So
that's the hardest shift, is to just to say, I got to work on me.
Yeah, it is kind of a rude shock when we realize we're the common denominator in these things, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can remember my husband sharing with me about a man that he used to work with some years ago, and the man had been through like 5 or 6 marriages, and you know, he had been very embittered and angry at all these women that had done him wrong and so on and so forth. And I'm sure they weren't perfect people, but my husband said at one point he came into his office one day and he said, you know, he said, I've just kind of had to realize now that after this many marriages, I probably had something to do with this. And that was like a new revelation for him, you know, after being through 5 or 6 failed marriages.
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody hearing that story, it's obvious to us.
Right.
But sometimes it's not obvious when it's you.
Exactly.
Because you know what your ex's problems were. And so it's easy to say, yeah, sure, in that situation. But in my situation, no, my ex was crazy. He was drunk. He was this or that. And of course, nobody said you married a saint.
Right.
But there's so many dynamics there about how you ended up with that person and what your part was in the dynamic that happened, right? In my new book, I use this this kind of metaphor of like a relationship is like making a stew together, you know, and you're both putting in your ingredients. You know, you're both carrots and onion. You're both throwing your junk in the stew, and then it gets all mixed up and it doesn't taste good, right? So the idea is like, okay, yes, my ex put some junk in the stew, but without your stuff, it would never have tasted like it did.
Right.
So all you can control is what's the stuff that I'm putting in this? I mean, you can't control what the other person's bringing. I mean, we could have a conversation about why you're attracted to certain dynamics, of course. But if you put your attention on what did I put in my first marriage or my second marriage or that relationship that made it taste crappy, then you start to wake up and you can work on those things. You can change those things. So now you're just going to end up putting really healthy ingredients in your stew. And I'm telling you, when you're doing that, you're going to attract someone who's also putting healthy ingredients in. And then you're going to have something that's going to be tasty rather than, you know, make you throw up.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So where do you see, what are the most common flabby relationship muscles?
Yeah. In my book, I describe seven of them. Mm-hmm. It was interesting when I thought of that metaphor, relationship muscles, that when I thought about physical fitness, there's actually seven major categories of being physically fit, right? There's like strength training and aerobic and flexibility and core. And then there's nutrition, diet, rest. I think that's seven. So I've identified like the seven muscles to work on to try to make it simple. The idea of personal growth, the idea of working on myself, it sounds good, but like, what does that mean, work on myself? I mean,
Right.
In the gym, it makes, okay, I know what that means. Lifting weights on a treadmill. What does it mean to work on myself, right? So there's a couple of major muscles. One of them we don't talk very much about is your relationship to your mind, right? So what I say in the book is we have these muscles, but they're sort of relationships that are going on inside of us. You might say, well, I'm single. I'm not in a relationship. Well, yes, you are. You're in at least seven relationships going on inside of you. And one of them is relationship to that voice in your head. And in my book, I call him or her, depending on what you want to give the name of that neurotic person that lives inside of you. It's like your relationship coach lives in your head because it's always giving you advice. Well, you should do this, you should do that. And when a person says that, oh, it means this. When a person does that, oh, it means that. Oh, they haven't texted you all day today. They're going to dump you. So you better beat them to the punch and dump them first, right? There's that ongoing chatter in your head. And in the relationship context, it's like you have a little relationship coach on your shoulder and it's whispering in your ear. And it functions, I think in the book, I talk about it functions as you're psychic, you'll start to predict they've been divorced twice. They've got commitment issues, right? It'll start predicting how they're going to behave. Oh, he cheated once, he's going to cheat again. Wait a minute, right? So it also functions as your Secret Service agent, that little voice in the head. You know, Secret Service, at the first sign of anything scary, they will whisk away the politician to safety. So you've got this little voice in your head that is looking around. It's like wearing glasses, looking around, who's out to get me? Who's gonna hurt me? Who's gonna play me or deceive me? And at the first sign of anything, you're out, walk away, right? And so you start to recognize that if you pay attention to that voice, it is wrong all the time.
It has a lot to say.
Oh, it does. And almost all of it is incorrect or it's just based upon your past.
And fear.
If you've been cheated on a bunch of times, then everything a man does, you're going to be, that might mean he'll cheat, right? It affects the way you see a man standing in front of you who's got nothing to do with your past, but you have a hard time being open and available because that voice in your head is, right, it's doing it. So that's just one. That's a huge one. We don't talk very much about our inner relationship coach. I say in the book that you need to fire your inner relationship coach. Mm-hmm. Like if you had a financial advisor that just kept giving you bad advice, buy this stock and then it tanks, buy that stock and it tanks, pretty soon you'd fire the dude.
Right.
Or the woman, right? I'm not taking their advice. They're wrong all the time. Well, you need to fire that voice in your head because it's full of just all the past and everything. So that's just one. Another one is your relationship with your emotions, right? Now, I'm talking to women right now, and I will grant you that you guys, I believe the feminine comes from the factory. It comes from the womb highly or more highly developed emotionally than the masculine, okay? That's a very general thing to say. It's kind of sexist, okay, fine. But in general, women are a little bit more emotionally intelligent than the average dude, okay? Mm-hmm. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you really know what to do when you're an emotional wreck. That doesn't necessarily mean you know how to handle your fear, your sexual feelings, your anger, your sadness. Most of us need to learn how to, we fall into these two camps with our feelings. We either, they're uncomfortable, so I want to avoid them. I distract myself, I grab my cell phone, I'll have a glass of wine, I'll exercise, I'll meditate. There's all kinds of ways when we feel something uncomfortable, like anxiety or loneliness or boredom or worry, to just avoid them in some way. Others of us, we get so attached to our feelings, we can never let them go. It's like something happens and it just, we get in the vortex of a feeling, mm-hmm. and now we feel depressed for a week, or something happened in the past and it's still there, right? So either we avoid or we attach. So we need to learn how to be in a healthier relationship with our feelings. Because if we're not, first of all, we end up creating a lot of stress and drama in our relationships because we kind of expect our partners to know how to handle this stuff for us or to fix it or to somehow be a solution to something. And that's just asking a lot. And then also men have feelings too. They come out differently. They're usually expressed with less words and sometimes with more power, but knowing how to handle your partner's feelings, right? So the whole area of emotions, we just need to be way smarter than a fifth grader in that area, because it really is the contact point. So even though some people listening right now, if I'm really emotional, I'm in touch with my feelings, yes, but that doesn't mean that you're handling them in the healthiest conscious way possible. Mm-hmm. I often ask people, like, what do you do when you're an emotional wreck? And most people don't have an answer. They either say, I just kind of hope it goes away, or I do something that might not be that good for me to just distract myself, or I'll vent it on someone, or I'll dump it on someone. So that's an area.
And these two can be really closely tied together too, because if we have a thought or a limiting belief, or this voice, this inner relationship coach is giving us bad advice, that can generate emotions that were based on something that this voice has told us that's not even true. And we could be reacting, responding, or showing up with this crazy thought, with this emotion based on that thought. Hard to show up really well in a relationship opportunity with all that going on.
Right. Right. They really are intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
Feelings are stories. Feelings come from thoughts. And feelings can sometimes then generate thoughts. Like, so, you know, if you have the thought, you know, you go on an internet date and it was a disaster. The guy wasn't at all what he said he was going to be, you know, and then you come home and you're discouraged and you have the thought, you know, I'm never going to find someone. I'm going to be single forever. Well, your body is going to react to that. You're probably going to feel down, depressed, or anxious, or angry, or something. Because when the mind has a story or a thought, the body kind of hears it and kind of responds to it. So yeah, they really do go together. Another muscle is our relationship to the past, which we sort of touched on already. But a lot of us have been hurt, betrayed, deceived, ghosted, gaslighted. No, you can't go through life without getting from some bumps and bruises and maybe some significant scars. I mean, I often joke that the only people that don't have baggage are the little babies in the maternity ward. Okay. Mm-hmm. Everybody else has got baggage. And so it's not wrong to have baggage and to have some of that stuff. It's like, what do you do with it though?
Yeah.
Because when you carry the baggage, see, it keeps your heart from being really available. Because the title here is, how do you find a conscious, available man? Because women all know men who aren't really available. They're either still involved. I talked to someone the other day, the guy was still hung up on his mother. Like he was in a weird relationship with his mother. Other men are still kind of getting over an ex. Other men are so wrapped up in their career. They're not available for anything. Some men are just wanting to hit it and quit it. So they're not really available for intimacy, you know? So we're all familiar with that, but women can be unavailable too, but usually it shows up differently. Usually it's because there's a wall around their heart. They've been hurt. And so there's a guardedness. There's kind of like, because you can see me, it's why it's great this is video. Many women go through life.
Mm-hmm.
Right, come, I want you, I want to be with someone, but stay away, stay away, stay away. And there's this push-pull. And when a good man feels that, it's almost like they might not know what it is, but it's not attractive. It's just, and it's just like, I want to go to that woman who's all this. I'm open. I have boundaries, okay? If you're an idiot, I'm going to smack you, okay? But my general demeanor is my arms are open. Come get me. I'm here. Let's play. Let's dance. If you prove yourself to be an idiot, okay, we're done. But that's very different from going into the world like this. I don't trust you. You got to prove it to me because my past is still alive in me because I got hurt so many times. Now I got this wall, right?
Yeah.
And I often joke, I've never seen a good man bring a sledgehammer on a date ready to break down your wall. They'll just go to some woman who doesn't have a wall. So some of the work, probably the majority of my work with my clients is helping them identify the wall. Mm-hmm. And how do you take that down?
Right.
How do you let go of your past? You'll always remember it, but there's a difference between your past is something that happened to you and it's something that's happening to you, right? When your past is still happening, means I still carry an anger, a bitterness, a closure, I'm not really available, because that stuff is still there, that's fine. But you gotta clear it away. And like I often talk about a woman's radiance, right? That's what's her shine, her energy, it's the Beatles when they say something in the way she moves. Okay. That's something I call radiance. It's your life force, your aliveness, right? That's what a good man craves. That's what he's attracted to, is your radiance. But your past is like the sun. The sun is shining, right? But sometimes the clouds block it and you can't see the sun. And
right.
Sometimes the clouds are so thick, it's kind of dark during the day. And so our past can block your feminine radiance. The thing that men are looking for, the thing that catches, that's why we say she's the light of my life, right? Right. That's the juice that he's craving. But if your past is in between you and your shine, then you see what I mean? So So a lot of times we all, men too, but we all have to do work on clearing the skies a little bit, clearing away some of the pain and the hurt, letting some of that stuff go so that your radiance can shine and you then feel available. You feel, a man can feel your playfulness. He can feel your sensuality. He can feel your vulnerability, right? Vulnerability is a word it's difficult to describe. It's kind of like, you know it when you see it. But to a man, when a woman is vulnerable, it speaks to a kind of openness that is just so sexy, right? It's like, if you put your hand in water, the water just moves around your hand and it just envelops you, right? You put your hand in a bucket of water and it just surrounds you. The water's vulnerable. If you freeze it, put your hand in there, you're going to break your fingers because it's hard. Sometimes we have a past where our hearts are frozen. They're hard. And that lack of vulnerability is what's keeping you single. Mm-hmm. Right? So no shame on that. It just takes some work to let go of some things to where that vulnerability, that natural vulnerability, not something you kind of make up. It's just a natural openness to life.
When I think about this, Roy, I remember a conversation I had a few years ago with a woman who said to me, I'm totally open to a relationship as long as I have 100% guarantee that I won't get hurt. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And then we talk about vulnerability, and there's a famous Brené Brown quote that says there is no intimacy without vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And so we can't enter a relationship with a guarantee that we won't get hurt, because part of being human and part of being open and part of being vulnerable is allowing someone to know us well enough that potentially we could get hurt.
Right.
But it's the only path also to find true intimacy. Now, we're not saying here when we talk about this that you share everything, your most intimate secrets, with just everybody. But I think a way to think about this, just to kind of give women something tangible around this, is that when you share something about yourself, a lot of times when we think about intimacy, we think about sharing kind of the deep, dark secrets or the things we're not as proud about or the things we might not want people to know. It's not just that. That can be a part of it, but it's also sharing your hopes, your dreams, the things that light you up. And I find a technique that can be really helpful around this is to share something, not just in the resume version, but to share the feeling around it or what you like about it. So if you're sharing a hobby, a key can be, you know, I enjoy jewelry making. This is something for me, for example. The reason I do is because I can make something beautiful and I can have this to express, you know, my colors, or to have something to go with an outfit, or to give to a friend for a gift that brings them joy. So then I'm sharing something about why I like that, why it brings me satisfaction. That's just a nugget about me, but it's right. A lot more interesting than just saying, I like to make jewelry.
Yes, I love that. Right, you revealed your heart to me. You revealed your passions, your interests and stuff like that. I do the same thing when I work with a client on their profile. If they say that they like going to the beach, I would say, okay, but why? Say something, what does it do to you? While I'm at the beach, I feel like it just opens me up and reminds me of that life is good. And I just feel whatever it is, right? So you're revealing more.
It's like a nugget from the heart, not just resume or factual information.
Yeah, you're kind of taking your heart and you're showing it to someone. Now, I really resonate with that person who said, I want 100% guarantee that I won't get hurt. I mean,
right.
God, I understand that.
Me too.
And most of us, when we hear it, we do say, yeah, okay, except at some point, everybody dies. So it doesn't make any sense 100%. But think of it this way. What if a person said, I'm not going to enjoy life, I'm not going to live it to the fullest, unless I can be guaranteed I will never get cancer? Right? So you're not going to live your life that you have and enjoy it fully unless you can get that promise. Like, what's the alternative? I'm gonna not enjoy my life, not live my life, right? So it's the same way, like, yeah, you could get hurt. Yeah, you get cancer. It's almost like, so what? It's like, I want my heart to be open. I want to enjoy life. I want to give and receive love. And sometimes people do things that hurt, mm-hmm. right? But here's the thing. See, this is another part that gets into trust, okay? If you feel, we're going to go in the spiritual end right now. If you kind of feel that your grounding and your ability to feel safe is based upon another person and how they behave, you're in trouble. Because I don't care who you are, people are unpredictable. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure my wife is going to love me 5 years from now, but I cannot tell you that that's true. She can't tell you that that's true. Okay. So if I want to feel secure, oh, I feel secure because I know my wife will love me forever. I actually will not feel secure. But if your life and your sense of security, your sense of grounding is built on something else that doesn't change, that doesn't die, doesn't decay, doesn't change its mind, doesn't have a bad day, doesn't cheat with a younger woman. If you're grounded on something completely separate, then yes, what a person does, it may hurt, but it doesn't really threaten you. Like in my book, I talk about this in the chapter on trust. I say, what you do might break my heart, but it can never break me. Mm-hmm. Because me, I'm built on something else. My trust is not in you. You're a human. I either trust in myself to learn and grow from whatever happens. I'm going to be okay no matter what you do. It may hurt, but I'm okay. Or I'm trusting, what do you call it? Life, God, the universe. So you kind of feel like there's a real sense that there is no threat to me. I can't be hurt. In fact, I can be vulnerable. I can be open because I can't be hurt, because you don't have that kind of power over me. My life is already secure and safe and grounded, right? And this is in every one of the spiritual traditions. And this is what the spiritual traditions are all about. What are you really attached to, right? And so that's why David said, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, which that person could think, oh, a relationship is like the valley of death, because if they leave me, if they cheat on me, it's going to kill me. But David said, I fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff comfort me. What he's saying is, I'm just not afraid because I really can't get hurt. So most of us have to grow through the stages of trust, from I trust you to I trust me to I trust whatever it is you want to call it. And the more your trust is evolving, the more free you are to be your most attractive, playful self. Because if I can't get hurt, if there is no such thing as being vulnerable, my security is solid, well, then I can play with you. I can risk revealing myself, because fear of rejection, I'm one with life. How can you reject me?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and that also, that source, whatever that source is for each individual person, is a source of love, which is unshakable. It's a source of love that never changes. It's a constant, and it can be a source that can fill us up, so that we're not as needy when it comes to relationships. We can enjoy sharing that love, sharing who we are intrinsically, and that secure feeling of knowing who we are with someone else. And that can create a beautiful experience. But that love is within us. It's always with us.
Right.
It's unshakable and unchanging. And then we can approach relationships from a place of greater confidence.
Yes. And most of us, even if we are actively in a church or a mosque or a synagogue, we understand it, but we recognize, oh, I don't know if I actually live that way. I've heard that my whole life. I believe that, but am I embodying that? Right. And so most of us just need to grow in not our understanding, but our lived sense of that, so that we live more and more without fear.
Mm-hmm.
Because people sometimes ask me, well, my female clients, you know, what does it mean to be radiant, a radiant woman? I'm like, well, it just means not to be afraid. If I got to net it out real simple, when there's no fear in you, you shine. And fear is what blocks us up. And so letting go of your past and dealing with the trust issues that all of us have really is the pathway to being your most radiant self. Your most attractive self is the part of you that's not afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But that's why I've got a job. That's why you've got a job, is because a lot of people have to work on that stuff. And there's no shame in that. I'm still working on this stuff. I mean, if you think I've got this all nailed down, heavens no. Okay. So it's all an ongoing journey of discovering who you really are. And then seeing that come out in your daily life and in your relationships, and then life begins to kind of work with you and sort of instead of against you. And I just haven't met many people that don't need someone alongside of them that might have been down the trail before to say, let me take you by the hand. Let me show you what I've seen. Let me help you ask these questions. Let me help you look in your heart in certain places. Let me identify a few common blind spots that we often have. Let me point to a few relationship personas, these false and fear-driven ways we relate that attract weird ways of relating from men. We get in these codependent, you know, I talked to a client just yesterday, such a great heart. And you can tell she moves through the world like a nurse. She loves taking care of people, just meeting people's needs, patching them up, loving. She just like loving on people. And she's like, but in my love life, I always attract, this is her phrase. What's it called? Misfit toys. All the men I attract are like misfit toys. I'm like, oh, sweetie. As long as you're going through life as a nurse, you're mm-hmm. going to attract wounded soldiers because right. they need you. So how can you be this loving creature, but not be wrapped up in kind of an overdone caregiving role that will only attract wounded people everywhere around you? Because she didn't know that. She just thought it was just her bad luck. Mm-hmm. How come all men are wounded? She asked me, Roy, tell me why all the men are so like misfit toys. No. The question is, why are you attracting the misfit toys and not the toys that work, whatever the metaphor would be? Right.
Yeah. So I'm going to state the obvious here. We started with this idea of keys to attracting a healthy, conscious, available man. And the obvious from our conversation here is that it all starts with you. It's not so much about him seeing who he is. Yes, that's a part of it. But where you really have the power and where you really have the chance to create that opportunity, it all begins with you. So the woman going through the world as a nurse, you know, it's like she may as well be having a big neon sign that says, come here for your wound care.
Right.
All you wounded soldiers, because I'm here to take care of you, or all you misfit toys, I'm here to heal you, to take care of you.
Yeah,
and so there's something going on inside of her where she gets some satisfaction from that, or that's part of her identity, or that's part of her own wounding or whatever going on for her. She can't control what's going on with the wounded soldiers. That's their stuff. That's their stuff to heal and take care of. And certainly that's their responsibility. But she can look at what's going on inside of her in terms of what is going on inside of me that is creating this need for me to show up as a nurse for the world, a volunteer nurse for the world, the Florence Nightingale of single men, whatever, right?
Yep. Yep. Exactly. And she just texted me about an hour ago and she's still deciding. And so angels are holding their breath.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, men and life and your experiences, they're like your mirrors. They are showing you yourself. It's not them. They are showing up in your movie, you know, and they're a reflection of you. So that's hard to swallow. That's how we started this thing. It's a really hard thing to swallow because the ego says, no, 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 no. It's not me. I'm not attracting this. I'm not playing a part in this. It's just all those immature men.
Yeah, those knuckleheads out there.
Right. So that's why, you know, that's why I work at getting people in relationship shape. And those are just three of the muscles. There's actually seven of them. But the funny thing too, and I think we're probably getting close to wrapping up. So I want to mention that if you went to a gym and hired a personal trainer, you said, I want to get in really good shape. Okay. I mean, the best shape of my life. Right. The first thing a good trainer would do would put you through a number of assessments to see what you're starting with. Where are you strong? Where are you weak? Maybe you need to work more in this area than that area. So they're going to kind of get a current reading on your fitness level. Because once they have that, now I can design a plan to get you where you want to go. Well, I was thinking about this. It's been almost a year now. That why don't we do that with relationships? I want to have this healthy, conscious, intimate, sexy, luscious relationship with another human being. And I see myself as a relationship trainer. Well, the first thing I want to do is I want to assess your current fitness level. Like, how strong are these muscles? Which ones need work? Which ones don't? So I've created something called the Relationship Fitness Self-Assessment Test. And you'll link to it here on the page, but it's also on my website, coachingwithroy.com. And it's a 30 question, true, false quiz that takes maybe 3-4 minutes to take it. It is unbelievably accurate. Okay. And it's unquestionably confidential. Even I don't see your results. All I get notified of is someone took the test. I don't see what happens. So you'll take 3 or 4 minutes, answer the questions. You'll get an email that will give you a fitness level. It's kind of fun. You're either going to be ripped or you're going to be skinny fat or you're going to be overweight, unhealthy, or I took the test from the mindset I had, even though I wrote the test myself, I took it from the mindset I had before I worked with a coach many years ago. My wife did the same thing before she had done some years of therapy because we both had worked with our coaches or therapists before we met. But I took it from the mindset I used to have. And of course I had the worst ranking. I was dangerously out of shape. And that's the most common area. I don't know what the listener, the viewer would be, but you get a ranking and then you also, you don't just get left at the altar with a diagnosis. All right, you got a problem, see ya. I give you recommendations. So you get a fitness level result plus very practical recommendations on what to do to get yourself in better shape. So I just can't imagine that if you're watching this and you want a good relationship, that you wouldn't be curious. I'm not saying what I put together is like some gospel, some truth with a capital T, okay? But I would think you'd be curious. I wonder how fit I am. Maybe I'm more out of shape than I think, maybe not. But I would think just like if you're gonna wanna buy a house, the first thing you're gonna do is check your credit rating. Because if it's not very high, don't bother with the house. Raise your credit rating first, then you can buy a house. So if your fitness level isn't very high, well, you could find another partner and have the same experiences you've had in the past where the stew tastes nasty. Or you could raise your fitness level first and save yourself all the trouble. So I just encourage everyone to go to the website, or click on the link and get your fitness test results. And if you don't like them, you can send me an email and yell at me. Really, I can take it. You can argue with me. You can, but then again, maybe you'll get some good results and you'll be like, you're good to go. So that's, and it's all free, by the way, too. So it's cool
stuff. Yeah, and we will have the link right below the video or audio that people are listening from to make that really easy to access. And then Roy, where can they get your book? Is the best place Amazon? If they want to get one or more of your books, what's the best place for that?
There is my newest book, Relationship Bootcamp. Mm-hmm. My second book, my first book. They're all on Amazon. Amazon rules the world. You know, yeah. I mean, I have a bunch of copies in my closet, but it's cheaper on Amazon because if you bought it from me, you got to pay for the cost of printing and then the shipping. And they're like $15 on Amazon. So like everything else in the world, you get it on Amazon.
Yeah, exactly.
And the bootcamp book is in audio. The other ones are not audio yet.
Okay.
Coming, but not yet.
Okay, good. Yeah, I just wanted to mention that since we've made a lot of references to the book, just wanted to let people know where they could get those.
There's my sweet wife right there.
There's your sweet wife.
We got married on a beach.
It looks like a beach behind you. We can't see her very well, but she looks lovely from a distance.
Zoom in over there, but yeah.
Yeah.
And that's my son. Now he's 26.
Okay, great. Great.
That's me. It's my life.
Well, thank you so much, Roy, for what you've shared. I always enjoy our conversations so much. And I really do think this is such an important piece that we don't always think about so much, but it can make all the world of difference in terms of who you attract. So if you haven't been attracting or haven't attracted the kind of relationship that you've wanted up to this point, this could be a really good starting point for you. So be sure to check it out and be sure to join us for more of the man panel, because in addition to Roy's interview, we have a lot of other fantastic interviews from men, and it's turning out to be a really fantastic panel. So we're so glad that you're all here. Thanks so much, Roy.
Thank you.
Bye for now, everybody. Thanks for watching. See you soon.